This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Baseball is back. And so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, April 9th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Shortage of planes impacting U.S. air carriers. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, a survey by Zillow finds that million-dollar homes are now typical in a record number of U.S. cities. Let's talk about housing affordability and where Chicago fits in with Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thank you for joining us today. And I don't know about you, but every now and then I take Zillow for a spin just to see, you know, which homes near me have a walk-in heliport and things like that. And I'm surprised at the asking prices for some common middle-class homes. They're approaching and in some cases exceeding the seven-figure number.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob. And I do the same like you, and it's crazy. But I think realistically, it's supply and demand. I mean, there are just few homes out there that are available, and it's just driving these prices so high. And the folks that are living in those homes, they're just not interested in giving up that, you know, real great interest rate they have at the 3% and 4%.
And the list of the places with the most the numbers of million-dollar cities should come as a surprise to no one. Of course, tops the list, California, between Los Angeles and San Francisco, between all the entertainers in L.A. and the tech people in San Francisco. It's pricing the middle class out of those two cities, New York, New Jersey, Florida, Massachusetts, Colorado, all at the tops of the list. Where does the Chicago area fall on that spectrum?
Interestingly, we're kind of in that middle spot, but I'll note that it's doubled. Like, so from last year, from 2023, we had three cities, and now we're up to six cities with multi-million dollar homes in it. So it has doubled over the year.
You mentioned supply and demand being a real driver in home values and creating these million-dollar homes. Is it simply the interest rate lock? Is it just simply the fact that people don't want to give up those 2 and 3% mortgages they refied during COVID? Or is it also just simply a fact that some states are building more housing compared to others?
Yeah, I think that's the other part of it is there are some states that are literally just overdeveloping and they're putting these massive amount of homes out there. So now it's like, all right, what do we do here? Where do we stand? So that supply and demand in those states, it may not be as affecting as it is here in Chicago.
And then how is this changing migration patterns across the entire country? Because you do see there's kind of a tech exodus from California. A lot of people who might have been priced out of the San Francisco area set up shop in Austin, Texas. And, of course, now there's a real estate boom there. But what about you see more people from California moving to Utah, and all of a sudden Salt Lake City is the hot new spot. Is there a way that Chicago could benefit from some people who are being priced out of these expensive cities on the coasts?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to watch because it's very similar to what even happened to the Chicagoland area and the migration into the Northwest Indiana. I think the folks are just looking for where can they save. If it can't be on their interest rate, is where else can I save in that marketplace? And they're going to migrate to these cities that offer different opportunities, the amenities, and the ability to save money where they can.
And on top of that, thanks to remote work, I mean, even on Mondays and Fridays, you no longer have to really orient your life around transit or the expressway or even just proximity to the office. If you can connect by Zoom, you're there.
Amen. So true. I'm doing it from home right now.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, airlines are struggling to deal with a shortage of planes. It's
conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Summer travel is expected to hit record heights at a time when airlines are dealing with a shortage of planes. We're joined by Joe Schreiderman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And we're already seeing the announcements from airlines, especially those that are reliant on the Boeing 737 model, that they are scaling back their summer schedules or adjusting their operations to account for the fact that the 737 MAX once again is facing production difficulties.
Oh, you're right. And United's made it real clear that the plans for the MAX 10 production, which is a new, bigger version of the 737, that's really on a slow pace here. So Boeing's production line in general has just been much slower than hoped. They try to produce around 35, 38 a month, and they were still in the 20s. And of course, with all the drama there, that's not going to help things. And Airbus has got similar problems. They're producing close to 45 of their smaller A320s a month, and that's the lowest since 2021. So we just airlines can't get their hands on these new planes.
What is the airline equipment cycle like? I mean, how do airlines cycle in and cycle out aircraft? I mean, obviously, the age of the airplane isn't an issue so much as the takeoff and landing cycles. So can an airline keep, let's say, a Boeing 737-600 or 700 in service a little bit longer and just wait for that MAX to come in, or do these planes have a hard retirement date?
No, they do push these planes in service longer, and that has a number of downsides, both with maintenance. Of course, the biggest thing is fuel production, and you really want these major network airlines. The reliability problems that come with older airplanes, too, is just a real headache for them. So they can't retire some of these older planes, you know, roughly 10 or 12 years old, fast enough. Some of the planes you know, unfortunately, you know, the technology has advanced to the point where they're consuming maybe 10, 15, 20% more fuel than airlines would like. So it's just economic to have these newer planes. At the same time, you know, the airlines need these planes to fuel this surging international traffic that's just been a good thing for the carriers.
The biggest flight destinations this summer, according to Google, London, Paris, Tokyo, Rome, Cancun, and then domestic destinations like New York, Orlando, Las Vegas, Seattle, and then, of course, Athens, Greece, another place that a lot of people are going this summer. So it seems like everyone got their domestic travel urge out of the way in the last 2 years, and now they're going abroad. And does this mean that Boeing has the capacity, has those 787s and those 777s ready to go to take people across the ocean?
Oh, that's right. And certainly what we saw is a huge pent-up demand fueling traffic here in the U.S., especially the warm weather destination after the pandemic. That's kind of run its course now. We see airlines really discounting quite a bit here domestically with sales on Southwest, and some of the ultra discounters offering these, you know, tantalizing $25 fares on some routes. So we see domestic is kind of leveling off about where it was in 2019, but international has been just tremendous, and I think the fares reflect that. And so airlines are really good at, you know, if they can get their hands on these 737s, they can free up some of the bigger planes in domestic service for those transoceanic flights, but it's just not working out for them. So I expect Europe fares to be a little bit eye-popping this summer.
Generally speaking, where are airline fleets, domestic airline fleets, how do they compare to where they were prior to the pandemic? Because I think a lot of carriers use that shutdown period in 2020 to send older planes off to the graveyard in Arizona for good. Have they gone back to pre-pandemic levels, and are they trying to exceed pre-pandemic levels?
The fleets are getting close to pre-pandemic levels. We found that they are a little bit less, so the load factors are up. So if you notice, flights are crowded and airlines are still saying traffic down. It's because with these leisure markets, it's much easier to fill these up because you don't have to offer a lot of frequency. People want to get there cheap. So they're moving to bigger planes, and that means smaller fleets and more seats. And of course, that's the real dilemma with our O'Hare expansion. Are these bigger planes going to continue, or are they going to go back to smaller ones? And right now, it's fewer planes and more crowding on each of them.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University, talking about the airplane crunch coming up this summer.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you won big on the bets you made during March Madness, you may be on the hook with Taxman. Let's bring in Dan Rahill, wealth strategist with Wintrust Wealth Management in Chicago. Dan, thank you for joining us today. Now, let's say your ship came in. Let's say you picked UConn to win them all. You won your bracket pool, and you're taking home a princely sum. How much money are we talking about before the IRS starts to notice?
Well, Rob, automatic reporting for sports betting starts at $600. So at $600, the betting service that you use is required to issue a form W-2G. So it looks like your W-2, except that the G stands for gambling. And you should get a W-2G for that if it's over $600. It's possible two other forms might be used. It wouldn't be entirely correct, but some online betting sites use a 1099-MISC. And if it's coming through a PayPal or Venmo, which I doubt, but it is possible it could be on a 1099-K. But in any event, $600 is the threshold.
Now, let's say you lose more than $600 gambling on March Madness. How do you report those losses?
Well, it's interesting that losses do track and offset gains, but you cannot take a net loss. For example, if you earned $1,000 earlier in the year gambling, that would go on Schedule 1 of your Form 1040, and there's an actual line for it. It's line 8B for gambling. You put the $1,000 there. However, you just lost less than that or more than that. Let's say it's $1,500. That goes on a net itemized deduction on Schedule A, but you can't deduct more than net zero. You can't get a net deduction. So you pick up the income on the income section of your tax return. You can take the losses as a net miscellaneous itemized deduction, but you can't take a net loss.
So that sounds like a good incentive to keep people from, let's say, getting taken to the cleaners on December NFL games so they can offset all of their tax their tax liability for the season. They can't do some tax lost harvesting by betting on slow horses at the end of the year.
No. You cannot take a net loss. You can only offset winnings with losses from gambling.
And then very quickly, Dan, it sounds like the explosion in legalized gambling has probably formalized this process to a much greater degree compared to what processes were in place before the Supreme Court legalized sports wagering 5 years ago.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And that's why I say typically you should get a W-2G in the reporting of sports gambling, and it has been much more standardized. However, there are situations where people will still issue a 1099 MISC, 1099 MISC, for those gambling winnings more than $600. But yes, the reporting is quite automated now for anything over $600. But I do have to caveat this, because I am a CPA, that all income, even if it's less than $600, gross income under Code Section 61 of the Code means all income from whatever source derives. So technically, even if you won $10 in that pool, it should go on Schedule 1 of your Form 1040. I'm just saying that.
Good advice. Dan Rahill, wealth strategist, Wintrust Wealth Management in Chicago. Thank you for joining us.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Today.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station. News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Video has been released of the deadly shooting of a man by Chicago police. The EPA releases new regulations involving chemical plants. Travel Tuesday, we learn about a cruise custom-made for remote workers. And there's still time for younger workers who haven't done much in the way of building their retirement savings. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 139 points. The NASDAQ is down 12. The S&P 500 is down 13. 59 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies, going up to 66 today. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. We're learning more about the deadly shooting of a man by Chicago police officers on the West Side last month. The Civilian Office of Police Accountability says Dexter Reed fired first, striking an officer before four colleagues fired nearly 100 rounds at him. This is Mayor Johnson.
As this city remembers the life of Dexter Reed, I urge everyone to remain peaceful and not lead our city down a path of division, but instead towards healing and transformation that ultimately builds a better, stronger, and a much safer Chicago.
The Sun-Times reports Reed's family has viewed footage of the shooting along with their lawyer, whose firm has sued the city in other police shootings. The Environmental Protection Agency has issued a new rule it says advances President Biden's commitment to environmental justice.
The EPA rule applies to companies like Dinka, where CBS News spoke to residents in an exclusive report in Reserve, Louisiana, a majority black town in what's known as Cancer Alley, where people are dying.
It's overwhelming to me.
Dinka says the EPA rule isn't based on science. Other affected facilities around the nation are in Texas, the Ohio River Valley, West Virginia, and the Upper South. Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Let's take a look at what's impacting Wall Street with Ryan Dietrich, chief market strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And it appears that traders today, at the very least, might be bracing for tomorrow's Consumer Price Index report. They're trying to cushion the blow if it is indeed a blow.
Well, you're right, Rob. Thanks for having me back. And yesterday we had the eclipse. It was extremely light volume because of that. Now today we're just kind of watching paint dry. As again, we got the always important inflation data coming out, the consumer level, the CPI comes out tomorrow. We can get more into the weeds on that. But at least for today, honestly, Rob, we're just kind of sitting out waiting for tomorrow and that data.
It seems like, as far as recalibrating expectations on the economy are concerned, that a lot of this, these things that are driving inflation, are perhaps the commodities market realizing that there's no economic downturn, that there was actually that break we received in oil prices and gas prices in the last couple of months were bets made on the economy slowing down, and now we're realizing the economy is not slowing down.
Well, you're right. I mean, we just had fourth quarter GDP revised higher again just recently, and you've got copper prices at 52-week highs. You've got gold. Gold, not, you know, that's not like a commodity we're necessarily buying because in industrial metals, what I'm trying to say, but that's been strong. Silver's been strong. Crude's been strong. The truth, in our opinion, is the global economy remains strong. I've come on with you for a while saying that, and I think those commodities are showing it. Now, the big question is, well, is it going to go into overall inflation? And yeah, maybe a little bit, but I mean, listen, food is only up like 1% year over year. We've got some other parts of inflation that really matter to the consumer that have come back. So again, we think overall inflation, that trend, we had 9% inflation in June of 22. Now we're down around 3.5%, give or take, see what tomorrow brings. We think we're still working our way lower and should be sub 3 here within a couple months.
We're talking today's market activity with Ryan Dietrich, chief market strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. They say history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I was looking at the CPI reports going back to the early 90s this morning, and it seems like we're in mid-1990s territory, where we finally broke the back of the 70s and 80s inflation, but the economy was picking up steam once again, and we're looking at CPI numbers that were maybe in the high twos and low threes, and with corresponding interest rates in the fives.
Well, you're right, and that's a good old-fashioned Mark Twain quote right there. History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And very quickly, to put this like this, I mean, historically, inflation runs like 3.5%. You know, we're so spoiled by this 2% inflation we saw last decade, but you can't have it both ways. Now we've got much better GDP growth, right? Our economy is humming along way better than it was most of the last decade, and the flip side of that is you have a little bit more inflation. So that's not the end of the world, and to make this very quick, we've got productivity in our country running at some of the strongest levels we've seen since when? Since the mid to late 90s. When, Rob, when you have strong productivity, like we finally are starting to see, you can pay higher wages, usually puts a cap on inflation. And let's not forget, 94, the Fed hiked a lot, bond market struggled, stock market was kind of sort of weak, we had a mid-cycle slowdown. Then they started to cut in 95, and it was kind of the way to the races with that strong productivity. You look at where we are now. History doesn't repeat itself, it often rhymes. We're probably going to have a Fed cut or two here coming up next next quarter or so. And again, with productivity strong, we think wages can stay strong. We're not going to see a major spike in inflation. All positives in our view.
And then very quickly, Ryan, on the rate cut debate, we went from maybe seven cuts at the beginning of the year. Now we're talking about three, maybe two, and some people are trying to talk themselves into zero rate cuts in 2024. Where do you see things?
Yeah, we think probably two to three still makes sense. Again, inflation was a big problem. That's why they hiked. Now inflation's not as much problem. And very quickly, why is there less chance of cuts now? And why are we kicking the football down when it's the first one's going to be? Because the economy is strong. This is not 2022 when the Fed was more hawkish because of supply chain issues, the terrible war, and high inflation. This is because, again, the economy is strengthening. That's why we're seeing less cuts. That's not the end of the world, if you ask us.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, customizing a cruise for the remote worker. It's
the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, and in this segment, we're looking into a new phenomenon, a cruise designed for members of the work-from-home crowd. We welcome in Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator of Jet Set Juliet. Find her on X, the former Twitter at Jet Set Juliet. Juliet, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Rob.
And it seems like this is the brainchild of Richard Branson. It's actually one of his ideas. It's part of Virgin Voyages, which is the cruise line for adults. It's the polar opposite of Disney cruises. It's the antimatter to the matter of the Disney dream. And it seems like he's solved the one real problem you get on board, and that is connectivity once you leave sight of land.
Well, that remains to be seen. Supposedly, they have the fastest Wi-Fi now on the water, but we'll get to that in a second. Are you a cruiser? Do you like cruises?
I do, and as I mentioned, we have three little girls at home, so we're always leaving from the Disney port at Port Canaveral.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, I really like cruising because you embark, you drop off your luggage, you don't have to lug your luggage around until your cruise is over. And in the meantime, you know, you're waking up every day or so in a new port or a new country, which is why I think this new cruise option from my idol, Richard Branson, is like just the coolest guy on the planet. He's so ass, and I love this. This is why I think this new cruise option is really going to be appealing to a lot of people. Since COVID, you know, right around 2019, remote work has quadrupled. So he is very clever. He is definitely on to something that I think is pretty, it's pretty forward thinking. He's targeting one of the fastest growing demographics in the world, which is the remote worker. And one of the ways, like you said, that he's doing this is through his adults only cruise line, Virgin Voyages. Initially, the target passenger was the millennial. But it's funny because as the company has started to kind of roll out, it's my demo, the Gen Xer, who is doing most of the booking on these Virgin Voyage cruises. So this could definitely be a grab for those millennials, you know, the 1981 to 1996 born during that time, by far the dominant generation when it comes to remote working, followed by Gen Z. So basically, here's how it works. You book a sailing between June and September of this year on what's called the Scarlet Summer Season Pass. Rather than book before week-long cruises, you know, back-to-back on the same ship, you just book a month-long cruise on this Scarlet Summer Season Pass, which is like a 30% discount from what it would be if you were booking week-long cruises back-to-back. It's pretty insane. The itinerary takes you through the Southern Med. You'll be going to places like Cannes, Rome, Palma de Mallorca, Ibiza, Corsica. This is the craziest part. 10,000 per couple or per room, which, you know, they fit two people in there. So it's like $5,000 for, you know, everything that you could normally get on a cruise, plus you've got a room with a terrace, Wi-Fi, and access to workspaces. And I'm going to circle back to those things in a second. Again, $5,000, this is a month's cruise. So Virgin giving you the option to switch out travel companions as the cruise goes on.
That's a rather awkward conversation, Juliet. It's like, look, I met somebody in Ibiza, and they're staying with me the rest of the voyage. So you can find your own way home.
Right. I think it's appealing for the younger single people, but this is already making waves, pardon the pun. The first sailing sold out within 48 hours, so there's like a second cruise option now. But despite this move, I think, to attract the youngins, the executives are saying most of the passengers that are doing this digital thing are my age. People that are working remotely full-time and that are, you know, in their 50s. So it's kind of interesting. But Virgin does acknowledge the fact that Wi-Fi on cruises is challenging, to say the least. So they've got this brand new revamp of their Wi-Fi, and it's supposedly the fastest Wi-Fi at sea. But again, we don't know this yet. We'll see what happens when you've got full-time remote workers really needing the Wi-Fi to work quickly. And that starts in June.
Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, Jet Set Juliet, finder on X at Jet Set Juliet. Of course, the humble anchor and host of the Noon Business Hour. I'm here in the studio for you every day. But if you find yourself tuning into the show one day and you hear Bob Marley in the background, you'll know that I've taken advantage of the Virgin Voyages offer and that the Wi-Fi is really good.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Building a retirement fund is something that you should start as soon as possible, but there's still some hope if you've been putting it off. Let's get some direction from Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And the retirement discussion we usually have when it comes to saving for retirement is usually how should you play it if you are close to hanging it up and taking your gold watch and going away and enjoying the rest of your life and enjoying your savings. But if you started, let's say maybe you weren't comfortable saving when you started your first job at 22 or 23, and now you're 30, and you don't have much in the way of a 401k. What can you do?
Yeah, thank you. Definitely time is on your side. So the earlier you start, the better. There was actually a study done by Fidelity Investments, which is the nation's largest 401k provider, that the median 401k for someone in their 30s is a little over $20,000. And that's not a lot. And so, you know, starting early really, really can help. One rule of thumb is whatever you can save is great. But if you can save 15% in your 401k, including match, and make sure you understand the match, put in the minimum. The match is the amount that a company will give you. For example, they might match 1% for every 2% you put in. So you put in 2%, you're going to have 3%. That's like free money. So make sure you understand the match.
And we're talking about, this was the calculation from CNBC, that let's say you didn't save in the first couple of years of your professional life, but then you start saving at the age of 25. And even at that point, you will have $2 million in your 401k at a growth rate of 6% by the time you call it a career.
Exactly. And that's if you start in 25. But if you don't start till 30, the CNBC calculated that you'll have about $1.4 million. That's a $600,000 difference. And that's putting $1,000 a month into retirement. That's close to that $15,000. So you can see that, you know, by doing it those extra 5 years, that's $600,000 more you're going to have in your retirement. If you wait till 35, the CNBC numbers calculate it's a little over $1 million. So you're giving up $1 million in your retirement by waiting 10 years to getting started with investing. So the key, start now. And I always say, I say this a lot, Rob, on the podcast, the best gift you give to yourself is live within your means and make sure that you allocate some money to save.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management, based in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
Baseball is back. and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.